Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Aris Matakos, back again for another week of delectable medley of footballing splendor. We'll go with that. Yes, it was a fantastic week of football and I can't wait to speak to you all about it. But before we start, as always, hope you're well. Hope everyone is well. Hope everyone's teams won on the weekend as per. We like to spread positivity and joy and happiness in this extremely tumultuous planet Earth that we live on, considering events that have occurred, which we're not going to speak on for obvious reasons. But yeah, hope everyone's well. Hope everyone has had an enjoyable week. For those living in Melbourne, we've had very inconsistent weather as per. It's 22 degrees outside, but it feels like it's 400 degrees in here. So that's why I've got the aircon on and I am sweating like dog's balls at the moment. So hopefully that we can just power through. Hay fever as well, absolutely killing me naturally because it's October. So hopefully once we get into November that stops. But yeah, the year is slowly coming to an end. Like the uni and school's coming to an end. I finish uni. Technically, I finish uni next, so like on Sunday. That's when my last assignment is due. So get that done and then we can not do anything different because that's just the nature of the beast. But yes, hope everyone is well, as always. Anything else to speak on? Nothing much. I went to the football on Sunday, which was great. Victory in Newcastle. Speak about that more when I speak about it properly. But yeah, good to finally get back. That was actually my first game in a while. I didn't really go to any of the football after the derby last year because didn't want to. So yeah, it was my first game in a while. Good to get back into the swing of things and actually watch 8 goals. 8 goals going. 15,000, give or take, at Amy, which was pretty good. North Terrace pumping as always. Show about Chelsea, which once again we'll touch on. Just awful. Just dog shit. So that's good. That's good, isn't it? 2-0 loss to Brentford. Yeah, what a pathetic performance that was. I don't know if anyone watched it. It was the early game for those in Australia on the Saturday night. I know Saturday was some people at Halloween parties and stuff, but I stayed in and watched it for what reason I don't know. But that was funny. That was funny. But anyways, I digress. Hope everyone is well, as always. Before we start, before we kick things off, and before we start speaking about the football properly, I implore you all to subscribe to Two Footed Tackle Podcast on YouTube. Like the podcast, like the videos, notification bell so you don't miss out on any clips. All the socials, Two Footed Tackle Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter for all your Two Footed Tackle podcasting needs. And then you've got all the audio platforms, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. They're the four audio platforms, yes. So even if you watch it on YouTube, just go on over to the audio platforms and give them a little bit of a bump. Give them a 5-star, give them a follow, a rating, a listen, etc., etc. But what do we have to speak on today? Well, we have quite a lot to speak on. We have some issues at some big Premier League clubs, which we'll touch on. I think you guys can guess the two Premier League clubs I'm referring to there. We've got the player who I think is currently the best footballer in the world. We'll touch on him. Some other happenings across Europe, and then we'll move back down under because we've got the Tillies. They're back. I want to speak on Victory. I want to speak on Adelaide. And just the general A-League kind of happenings. Let's go. Let's move. Let's kick things off and let's get on a plane and go straight to Spain, actually. We are not going to go to England like we normally do to start things off. We're going to go to Spain and we are going to speak on Jude Bellingham. The El Clasico has come and gone. The first El Clasico of the year. The first El Clasico that has not been played at either the Camp Nou or the Bernabeu, I think. I'm pretty sure anyway. Obviously, with the renovations, they played at what's the actual stadium called? Something like Olympic Stadium or something. Which was a little bit weird, but I think that the stadium has the vibes of the Camp Nou, so the Camp Nou or the new camp. So it got away with it in a little bit of a sense. If I can actually find where the game was actually played. It was, what's the actual stadium called? The Estadio Olympic. Olympic Stadium, if we're going to translate. Regardless, I'm digressing. Yeah, Real Madrid win 2-1, despite a very, I wouldn't say depleted Real Madrid team, or Barcelona team. Obviously no Lewandowski, who else didn't start? No Lewandowski, Rafinha didn't start, so no Koundé didn't start. So quite a rotated team for Barcelona due to injury. In that same, Real Madrid had a pretty much full strength team. Camavinga and Modric both didn't start, but I mean, when you've got Ferland Mendy and you've got Vinicius, Rodrigo, Valverde, Tchouameni, Bellingham in that front six, I think you're okay. Cruz as well was in that. Not Mendy was playing left back, of course. So yeah, Real Madrid win 2-1. It was an early goal from Ilkay Gundogan in the first half to get things going for Barcelona inside the first 10 minutes. But then cometh the moment, cometh the man, Jude Bellingham. Right now, he is the best footballer on the planet. I don't think, as the hay fever is coming in again, as things stand right now, he's the best footballer on the planet. Like, I don't see, you can speak about, I think when trying to judge who is the best footballer on the planet, you can look at form and you can look at credits in the bank. I think right now, Jude Bellingham has found the mix between having proven he's a good player previously and having a purple patch of form out of this world, which makes him the best footballer in the world. Like, he's the best player in the world and it's not even close right now. Like, he plays as a 10 and has got 10 goals in 10 games in the league. He's winning El Clasicos off his own boot. He's winning games for Real Madrid literally by himself. To go from to being a centerpiece at a relatively not massive club. So from going from being a centerpiece at a not massive club, but still a pretty big club in Borussia Dortmund, to moving to the biggest club in the world for over £100 million, and to continue being that centerpiece and continue performing at that level, he is unbelievable. Like, he is just freakish. Like, that first goal on the weekend, to do that in your first El Clasico, away from home, with the spotlight of the world on you, people were watching that game just to see whether or not he was going to perform. And for him to do that off one touch wallop from 35 yards, mate, it's unreal. Like, it is unreal. Like, he's up there now in the conversation for me in terms of when you're talking pound for pound best footballers on the planet. I still think if you want to bring anyone in to your football club, it's probably Mbappe just because of what he offers. Like, in terms of just ruthless goal scoring, and same with Haaland. But if we're talking, but Bellingham's now in that sphere. I think right now he's the best footballer in the world. And if he can maintain this level of form for the next 6, 12, 18 months, obviously not the same because it's probably unreasonable, but if he can maintain this similar level of form for the next year and a half, he will be undoubtedly the best footballer on the planet. Like, it's freakish what he's doing right now. He's got 10 goals, like I said. He's got 10 goals in 10 games in the league with 2 assists. He's got 3 goals and 1 assist in 3 games in the Champions League. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't get it. He's so good. So, so good. Like, and it's interesting looking at him and trying to analyse him, because he's what? Does FotMob say his height? He's 180 centimetres, right? So he's quite tall. He's not like 190. Like, he's not sitting at like 6'4", 6'5". But he's what? 180 is what? 6 foot, give or take? 6'1", maybe? Maybe a little bit short. Maybe 5'11". Who knows? But he's still... He's forget about looking at the numbers. When you watch him play, he's got a physical presence about him. He's quite tall. He's quite lanky. He's robust in a challenge. He can really push his weight around. So that would lean a lot of people to assuming he's like a number 8 or like a box-to-box midfielder, very combative, but also has the technical ability to like pass the ball around, to get forward and to impact in the final third, etc. But Jude Bellingham plays more like a 9 than an 8. I'm not saying he's a 9, but he plays more like a number 9 than he does a number 8. I mean, which kind of means that he's a 10, and that's the point I was going to lead to. He's a 10. He's a true number 10. And I think he can play as an 8. I think we saw maybe with England at the Euros, at the World Cup, that he did play slightly deeper. Obviously, because they wanted Saka to come inside, they wanted Kane to drop a little bit deeper, so if you did play Bellingham as that 10, it would congest that area quite like a lot. Congest that area quite a lot. You know what I mean? It would make that area quite congested, and it would like people would run into each other, could get in each other's space, etc. Right? So I think that's why they had to force Bellingham to play a little bit deeper, play a little bit more kind of like a box to box midfielder, but less defensively, more offensively. But I think his best position is a number 10. I mean, even when we look at the game on the weekend, they obviously had the two strikers that Real Madrid played with, Vinicius and Rodrigo. So two players who traditionally are wingers, two players who like to use their pace to get into the channels and even have the ability to go really wide and then cut inside using those diagonal runs and that kind of L-shaped run coming in from the byline, which allowed Bellingham a lot of space in midfield and a lot of space floating in that number, in that kind of zone 14 area, just outside of the 18-yard box where the D is. So I think allowing him to have that space, allowing him, or like giving him the license to basically just do whatever he wants in that area, I think is so valuable, because he's a freak of nature. Like, his technical ability for someone that size is unreal. His mentality to just take it on, like, who goes for that, for like his first goal? Who takes that shot on? Who does that in their first El Clasico at 20 years of age, with the whole world looking at you? You just don't want to make a mistake. You just don't want to. You don't want to stuff up. You don't necessarily have to play exceptionally. You just don't want to stuff up. And yet he does that. Like, it's unreal, freakish. But yeah. I mean, if we're looking at his games, like he's scored. He's got like he's for Real Madrid. He has scored in his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's scored in his last 5 games for Real Madrid. It's in all comps, I should say. It's just insane. Like, it's freakish. So, yeah, I just wanted to shout out Bellingham, because he's, just unreal. Unreal footballer. England are so lucky to have him. And for God's sake, don't fuck him up. And I'm actually happy he's gone to Real Madrid and he didn't go to, like, a United. It just works. Him at Real Madrid works. He also looks great in that kit as well. But, yeah, I think he's the best footballer on the planet right now. It's not even close, in my opinion. So, yeah. That's kind of all I wanted to speak on for Jude. I think he's exceptional footballer that doesn't get the credit he deserves, because he doesn't play. Like, if he had scored 10 in 10 in the league for United or for Liverpool or for City or for Chelsea or for Arsenal or for Spurs, It would be, oh my God, he's the best thing ever. He's the better than Messi, better than Ronaldo, better than Pelé, all of them, right? The hype around him would have been insane. Just because he's playing in Spain, he's playing in a farmers league, even though Spain is quite a competitive league. Just look who's top of the table in Spain. Fucking, it's Girona. They're now second, but like they're equal on points with Real Madrid. Fucking Girona. So it is a very competitive league. It's not a two-horse race like it once was, or even a three-horse race. Like, Girona are up there, Real Sociedad are pushing, like, there or thereabouts. But, so it's not a farmers league, right? Like, other leagues potentially are. And I think it's one of the leagues that has a little bit better football, I would say. I think if we're talking entertainment-wise, I think Germany's probably the most entertaining league out, except for England. So when players go, like, I mean, Bellingham was there, Musiala was there, Adeyemi, even though doesn't represent England, same with Musiala. But, like, people like that, obviously Kane's gone there now. I think English people tend to look at their players going to the Bundesliga as, like, a pretty good step. Spain, maybe Real Madrid and Barcelona aside, less so. France, less so than that. Italy, less so than that. So, I don't know. It's one of those things. But I think the Spanish league is a great league, and I think it suits Bellingham's... It suits Bellingham's play style very well, because he's combative, so he can bully some of the lesser physically capable players in that league quite well, but he's also got the technical ability to match it with the best of the best. I mean, he's training alongside Modric and Kroos every day, like... When you're talking about technical footballers, it's one of those things. Anyways, let's move on. Let's get a flight back to England, and let's speak on two clubs who had shocking results over the weekend. Let's go with Chelsea first, just briefly. Nothing too kind of big. Nothing too big for Chelsea. Just briefly, 2-0 loss to Brentford. Very, very bad. Very bad. Just disappointing. Just not good. Not good at all. Didn't look likely. Didn't look likely in the slightest. Just not able to penetrate through a final third. And the inability to break down a low block is staggering. Like, it is staggering. The inability for Chelsea to break through a two banks of four, it's unbelievable. Like, how Poch hasn't come up with a style of football, a combination on the training field, or a kind of pattern of play that can get you to the byline or get you into an area where you can get a good cross in. It was just patient, centre back to out wide to enter. I mean, Enzo didn't even play, so it would be Caicedo to Caicedo back to the centre half to left back to right back to Caicedo to Gallagher to centre half out wide to Sterling. He does a step over, doesn't work, comes back to the centre half. Like, it was just boring, fucking boring football that didn't create, didn't threaten, didn't do anything which gave me as a fan hope, which is quite concerning. It was just bad. And considering how well we've played in the last couple of games, like, we played Arsenal very well. Like, we played Arsenal very, very well. It was just disappointing. The last goal as well was just fucking embarrassing. Like as soon as I saw Robert Sanchez go up for that corner, I knew there was a 99% chance we were not scoring, and there was also about a 70% chance that they would go up the other end and score their second and seal the game. I'm happy it wasn't Mopai, just quietly. If Mopai had scored that, I would have fucking jumped off the Westgate. No harness. I wouldn't have. Just clarifying. That would have been awful. But, yeah, not good. We got Blackburn midweek in the AFL Cup. Just win that game, for God's sake. Win that game. Win it quite well. Get the confidence back up. Get a home win for the first time in fucking forever. That'd be awesome. And then we can just keep on keeping on, right? Right? Right. Not good enough, Chelsea. Not good. But on the weekend, we've got Tottenham. So that's... I actually won't know the result of that game because that's happening Tuesday morning. So, as in Monday night, Tuesday morning. So I would have already recorded next week's episode before that game even happened. So that's... Yeah, that could be bad. That could be bad. I could be watching. Think about this from my perspective, right? I could sit here and watch my footballing icon and my footballing role model and my footballing hero coach my team's biggest rival to a comprehensive win against my team at their home ground. Hopefully we can just, you know, 3-point lane and all that good stuff. Hopefully we can relive the glory years. But I'm digressing. Let's move on to a team that also had a lot of issues, but I can actually, I feel very gleeful about speaking about them. Is, of course, Manchester United. Now, they lost 3-0 in their Manchester derby on the weekend. In isolation, not a bad result in terms of, not obviously it's a bad result, but losing 3-0 to the best side the Premier League's ever seen, or one of, yeah, it happens, right? Is at home a little bit disappointing, but they had Martinez out, Varane's only come back from injury, they're playing Amrabat at left back. Amrabat was playing left back, wasn't he? They're playing Lindelof at left back. My mistake. They're playing Lindelof at left back. Amrabat has only just come back into the team. They're playing Johnny Evans. McTominay was playing as a 10. Not like a lot of mitigating factors for this result in isolation. So I'm not going to sit here and pot United and say they should have beat City. They should have beat City. It was a disgraceful performance. Ten Hag should get sacked because of this performance, etc. I'm not going to sit here and say that. What I'm going to sit here and say is that they had 40% possession. They had 7 shots. It was just a very, very, very poor, very poor game from United from a tactical perspective. It's a microcosm of a greater problem at United, which is... It's the greater problem at United is that there is no like there's no philosophy. There's no overall philosophy. When you look at every other club, every other big club in the country, City, we obviously all know their very, very clear philosophy, right? Chelsea, under new management, have a philosophy of bringing in the youth. That's why they got rid of all the old players like Koulibaly, Aspilicueta, Marcus Alonso, Jorginho, all these old players, and they brought in the likes of Chukwuemeka and Nicholas Jackson and Cole Palmer and Mudryk, etc., etc., right? So there's a philosophy there, right? When you look at Tottenham, Ange, very early on, but he's already implementing a philosophy. Arteta, same, right? Liverpool, we obviously all know Klopp's philosophy. So at every other Premier League club, when they have a poor result, they can at least sit back and think, okay, there is at least an idea. There is at least an end goal that we know of. That whatever we are trying to do here, we are going towards an end goal. I don't know what Manchester United are doing, what they are trying to do. Because are they trying to play expensive football? They're not. Well, like, if they are, they're not doing it well in the slightest, because the way that they played on the weekend, they weren't even trying to play advanced football, right? I don't think they've had a game this season where they've truly broken down teams systematically with quick, incisive movement. I can't remember a game that's happened this season. So when you're taking a look at this result in the context of the greatest in the whole season, it's like, okay, in isolation, a 3-0 loss with half your team out to the best team in the world, okay, whatever, it is what it is. We can move on from that. But the performance underlines a greater issue, which is, what are they? What are Manchester United? Are they an underdog team? They can't be. With the amount of money they've spent, they can't be. With the manager that they've got, with the players that they've got at their disposal fully fit, they can't be. Are they a team that are going to dominate possession and are going to dominate possession and kind of suffocate teams to death with just pass after pass after pass? They're not that either, because they've not shown that. What they've shown is being a team that is heavily reliant on transition, heavily reliant on individual brilliance, and heavily reliant on teams overcommitting, giving them space so they can capitalise. My issue with that is that if you're going to do that, keep Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in charge, because that's what he was doing. And he did that and finished second, right? I'm not saying that that's a way of football, that's a way of playing football that will get you results. Sorry, that will get you trophies. It can get you results, but I don't think it's a sustainable way of football for a team like Manchester United to get you trophies. Ten Hag, the idea behind getting Ten Hag in anyway, was going to gut the squad, get new players in, and implement his philosophy. They've gutted the squad, they've brought new players in, and he cannot implement his philosophy. Can't do it at all. Nothing. Tipota, right? If we're going to use a Greek term or a Greek word. Nothing. Like, there is no sign of anything happening, no sign of any development, no sign of any moving forward as a team. It was, yeah. I think the game on the weekend, or the derby, had the potential to really act as a season refresh or a season reset for United. If they had turned up, if they had hosted City and had put their neck out on the line and said, you know what, we're going to play this way for playing football, and we're going to take it to them, then all right, fair enough. But they didn't. They cowered, they sat back, and they tried to hit City on the counter. And they were playing cowardice football. There's no stability top to bottom. Top to bottom, there is no stability. There is no, top to bottom, there is no stability. From the board, to the manager, to the players, to the fans, all of them are on different pages. All of them are aiming for a different goal. And the way that they are operating that football club is not one of an elite club. The way that they're playing football, they're not playing football like an elite club plays football. The way that they're treating their fans, that's not how an elite club treats their fans. The way that they're treating their players, like Jadon Sancho, that's not a way elite clubs treat their players. The way the board are operating and overseeing everything, it's not the way an elite club treats a football club, if that makes sense. It's totally disconnected from top to bottom, totally disconnected, and there is no clear synergized end goal between all of the departments and all the key stakeholders. It's the fans are on a different page to the players are on a different page to the coach is on a different page to the board, and the board is on a different page to the fans, and it's just this horrible, horrible revolving door of mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, and it leads to a football club that is totally, totally unorganized, totally abysmal from an on-field perspective, and from a backroom perspective and from a culture perspective, it's toxic as well. It's horrible. Horrible. And do you sack Ten Hag? I don't think that's going to make an iota of difference. I think you need to have a total refurbishment of that football club from top to bottom. Board, coach, players, the lot. And it's going to take a couple of years. A couple of years. Unless you get a ruthless guy in charge, like a ruthless manager that can just change everything, which I don't think will happen. So United fans either have got to hope and pray to God that Ten Hag can get just turn it around on field and then everything will sort itself into place after that. If not, they're going to be in for the long haul, unfortunately, because it's going to be a big, big issue. It's going to be a big issue for them already. Okay, let's come back to Australia and let's speak on football down under, because so much to speak about. I want to speak on the Tillys first. Let's speak on the Matildas. So the Matildas have kicked off their Olympics qualifier. Yeah, their Olympics qualification campaign. They started on Thursday night, was it? Yeah, a Thursday night with a game against Iran. One of the funniest games I've ever seen in my life. Australia, Iran aren't a good footballing, aren't a good women's footballing nation, as a lot of people could probably guess. So it was very much a turn up, don't lose the game yourself, and you should win. Australia played a very, very rotated team, probably only one starter in the whole team, and that was Ellie Carpenter, who actually got the first goal, which was very good. And then despite having 700 million shots, 150% possession, 7,000 passes, I just had all of the ball all of the time and had all of the shots. Australia couldn't score, so just after half an hour, they brought on Catley, Fowler and Kerr, our three best players. Arguably our three best players. And funnily enough, it was Fowler picked up the ball, played it out wide to Catley. Catley crossed the ball into the box and Kerr scored the second. So it had to take three of our best players to come off the bench to score our second goal against Iran at home, which, not good, right? not a good sign, but I think you can just take solace in the fact that it was just one of those games. Good performance from the girls at home. Lovely. And then on Wednesday, on Sunday night, we hosted the Philippines with a far stronger team out. It was basically our full team. Arnold, Carpenter, Kennedy, Catley, Hunt in defense, Gorry and Cooney Cross, Fowler, Razzo, Kerr, Ford were the front four. So it was essentially our best team. It was a team that I'm pretty sure we would have played that exact starting 11 during the World Cup. So our best team. At home against the Philippines, you can guess what happened. 8-0 win. It was 5-0 at halftime. Kerr scores three, did she? Yeah, Kerr scored a hat-trick. Fowler with a goal, and then Claire Wheeler off the bench with a goal as well. So, brilliant performance from the girls for both of those two games. They've kicked off their qualification campaign brilliantly. They'd be top of their group pretty convincingly. Yeah, top of their group. Philippines are second, Iran and Chinese Taipei are last. The Matildas obviously versus Chinese Taipei on Wednesday night. That's at HBF, isn't it? Is it? I think it is. I think it is. So that's at HBF. The game on Sunday was at Optus, and the game on Thursday was at HBF. So overall, good two performances from the girls. Lovely stuff. Good to see Kerr back in the goals, getting the crowd up and going. Good to see Fowler doing what she does, sitting in that number 10 role, floating out to the left, just taking the absolute P1 double five. Just, she's unreal. Like, she has the potential, like, from a purely footballing perspective, she has the potential to be up there with Sam Kerr from a pure footballing perspective, because she's just unreal. Like, Technical ability off the charts, mate. Like, off the charts. Like, it's kind of a little bit unreal to watch, because she's got this ability to pick up the ball and have this uncanny ability to, like, accelerate at a like accelerate really quickly off the mark, but keep the ball so close to her feet. Like the close control and the close control and the ability to weave in and out of danger whilst running at full pace is exceptional. Like it's really, really good. And it helps when you've got players like Kerr and Razzo and Ford around you to really to get on the end of some of these movements and get on the end of some of these plays. It obviously does help. It obviously does help. I think Ford and Kerr have a really good kind of, it's a really, really handy 1-2 punch to have, especially against big sides, because Ford, you can move forward up front, Kerr can like drop deeper, and because Kerr's obviously unbelievably, like has like similar to Fowler, has an unbelievable ability to basically do whatever she wants with the ball at her feet. So she can like drop deep, she can move out wide. And Ford has a really good goal scoring ability, and has a really, despite being a winger in a traditional sense, she plays very much like an inside forward. She likes to come inside and really make those diagonal runs and really be direct towards the goal. And then you've got Razzo on the other side, who is just pace, like pure pace. She's had a lot of football taken away from her, which is probably why she doesn't seem as polished, is probably the term. She's had a lot of football taken away from her, so she doesn't seem as polished as what Ford and Kerr have, or Kerr are. And then obviously Fowler's obviously the creme de la creme in terms of the young crop of women's footballers we've got coming through. So, it's one of those things where you can't really take a lot out of this kind of, you can't take a lot out of these three games because of the quality of the opponents. You just like, you know, ticking like miles in the legs, ticking things over, and just really, miles in the legs, getting the K's in the legs, and getting game time in, refining the system, tuning the system, and just making sure that everything is balanced and everything is good, and there's no issues in the system, and yeah, just getting used to kind of playing with each other again and all that stuff. Obviously, with a lot of them, like what all of them play overseas. Obviously, some of them play in England, some of them play in different leagues. So naturally, in the first game coming into Kent, the first game is obviously going to be quite sluggish, especially to kick things off. So I expect a good performance on Wednesday night against Chinese Taipei, and also 3 sellout crowds. I don't know the crowd for the game on Wednesday, but I can guarantee you it's going to be a sellout. So for those who sat here and said, oh, the people only care about the Women's World Cup, people only care about Matildas because it's a World Cup, blah, blah, blah. No. They've cut through. They've cut through. I think it's quite clear to see that they've cut through. And it's like, yeah, okay, you can sit back and you can sit back and snark at the crowds only being there for the Women's World Cup and say, yeah, whatever, they're not going to be there when they play the qualifiers. You're getting 3 sellout crowds in a row for 3 games, which are basically they're basically friendlies. Like, Australia are going to win all 3 of the games quite comfortably. People knew that before the games even happened. And yet, people are still rocking up. People still have such a passion for this group of players. They're just so likable. Like, I think that helps. Like they're just so likable. Every single one of them is so likable. You've got one of the best players in the world in Kerr. I think it'd be so disingenuous to say that they haven't cut through. So, very good performance for the girls. Lovely stuff. Just a very good performance for the girls for the first 2 games. I'm sure it's going to be the same in the third. And just very good stuff from them all. Lovely stuff. Okay. Let's move to the domestic leagues. I want to speak on... Let's speak on the Buck. Let's start with speaking on the Buck. Victory, just superb. 5-3 win. Unreal. Bruno, 4 goals. Bruno, 4 Nairoli. Yeah, it's funny. Do you get it? Because 4 goals and 4 Nairoli. It's really clever, isn't it? It's really clever. Bruno's one of those players where it's like... Yeah, I don't know. Bruno's like, look, he's obviously a Socceroo, right? He's obviously has an Australian cap. He's more than eligible for Socceroos, to be called up to the Socceroos. Yes, he's in the latter stages of his career. Yes, he's well past 30, but his pure goal scoring instinct is one of the best we've ever seen in the A-League, right? And couple that with his ability to drop deep and to be a link-up man, use his technical ability to get other players involved. Yes, I know he's old. Yes, I know he doesn't have the pace. Yes, I know that he isn't as dynamic as what he once was. But if he can maintain this level of form, he's got 5 goals in his first 2 games. Could he be called up for the Socceroos squad? Like, he offers something completely different. He offers something completely different to Duke, and he offers something completely different to McLaren. He doesn't necessarily have to start, but coming off the bench, if we need a goal with 10, 15 minutes to go, having Fornaroli at the top of the system, getting balls into him, he's one of the most ruthless finishers we've ever seen in the A-League, and by proxy, one of the more ruthless finishers we've seen for players eligible to play for the Socceroos. So I think, depending on whether or not he can keep up his form, I definitely wouldn't mind seeing it in the slightest. Definitely wouldn't mind seeing it, because he can, doesn't have to start, doesn't even have to play, but he's experienced. He knows, obviously, some of the players. He's been in Australia for quite a long time, so he knows some of the players, that played for City, some of the Victory players who could potentially get into the squad as well, like if Brimmer hits a run of form, or if he wants to take someone like a Volupele or Arzani or whoever, right? So, yeah, I don't mind it. Like, he scored 4 goals on the weekend. I think the best one, yeah, the people will speak about the Rabona, I really love the second one. I really love his ability to read the ball and read the mistake of the defender to come to, like, dart his run, to run straight at the goal and then cut inside. Like, make that slight deviation in his movement to just get there just in front of the defender and obviously before the goalkeeper and to score quite comfortably at the near post. I really like the movement for that goal. And obviously the Rabona shows just how good he is. And I thought he had 2 chances that hit the post in the second half. He could have had 6, like, really could have had 6, because he had 2 chances that hit the post. Just Newcastle did not have an answer for him. He was exceptional. And I think he typified a very good performance for Melbourne Victory. Just really, really solid. From front to back, top to bottom, really good. I thought our defence held up pretty well despite conceding 3 goals. One of them was a corner that shouldn't have been a corner, so that can I don't care about that. I thought Volupele was very good. I thought he took his goal quite well. I thought Arzani was exceptional. Arzani looked the business. He was very, very good coming off that wing, and I think Popper is managing him very well, so that's very pleasing to see from that perspective. I thought Teague and Marchand in the middle were quite good. Machach, okay. I would say he was slightly better last week, but I thought he was okay. I thought he was good. I thought he was just really industrious, really combative, but has the technical ability to do a lot of things with it as well. And just a special shout out to Clayton Taylor, because he was very good. He was very, very good. He gave Victory a lot of problems cutting in from the left-hand side. Someone who I didn't really... wasn't really an issue in my mind from a Victory perspective. I was more looking at the likes of Grossos and these players you can really... who are far more maybe established at A-League level. But that's his second A-League game. His second ever A-League game, and he scored a brace against Melbourne Victory at Amy Park. Pretty good. Pretty good, right? Pretty good. And North Terrace was bouncing, so that's good to see. The atmosphere was great. The Saturday night original derby is going to go off. I can't wait for that. They've got me. They've got me hook, line, and sinker. That's going to be an unreal game. First versus second, the two best sides in the league as things stand. 20,000 at Amy Park. North Terrace going to go off its tits. It's going to be good. It's going to be really good. I can't wait. I cannot wait for that. It's going to be I feel like we're going to be sitting here this time next week and speaking about that game in depth, because that's going to be very, very good. But speaking of the original derby, let's speak on Adelaide, because they beat Melbourne City 6-0 and they won in just unbelievable fashion. Unbelievable fashion. Their last row goal scorers. So, can we speak about that Irukunda free kick? Like, what? Like, the best ball striking ability I have ever seen from a 17-year-old. Like, it's not even close. It's not even close. That free kick is absurd, right? It's absurd. And funnily enough, that was actually overshadowed by the fact that Moussa Touré scored a goal and Bernardo scored a brace. And those 3 players, including Irukunda, have a combined age of 14. Like, Adelaide... I know they've had their issues in this off-season, right? But for the most part, Adelaide are a 101 guide to how to run an A-League football club. Just so much about that club works. The stadium is the best football stadium in the country. It's not even close. Cooper Stadium is the best, and it's not even a debate. The ability to bring in youth. I mean, I spoke about those three players. I didn't even speak about players like Johnny Yule, who is 18 years old and does not look out of place one bit in the league. He looks so, so good. Obviously, the Toure brothers, besides Musa, so the other two that have come through and have gone on to bigger and better things. Just, yeah, so much to like about that club, even from a victory perspective. So I should hate them. But, yeah, just a lot to like. A lot to like. And they were sensational. Sensational on the weekend. 6-0 against Melbourne City. I know it's a City team that has gone through a lot of ups and downs. It's a City team that has really kind of... It's a City team that's gone through a lot of ups and downs, and that is, like recently in terms of the upheaval with seven players leaving. They're the ups and downs I'm referring to, and obviously the grand final loss. So it's a tumultuous time for Melbourne City, but still to win 7-0 against a team that includes the likes of like Bayes, Antonis, McLaren, Saki, Reese, like, or Nuno Reis, whatever. Yeah, like, very good, very good performance. So I think you have to give credit to them. Otherwise in the league, MacArthur 1-2-1 against Central Coast. So that was a little bit of an upset in my books. I thought Central Coast, based on how well they played, based on how well they were last season, I thought, despite their performance last week, could have been able to capitalise or to bounce back, but they didn't. I still think their squad is quite good. It's just... Like, I still think Nisbet's quite good. I think Thayer Harris can offer a lot. Obviously Alu Kual, I should say, not Garen Kual. Alu Kual, I think, can offer a lot. But, yeah, just not clicking for Central Coast at the moment. MacArthur, full credit to them. They had a good win. Western Sydney, what a goal from, was it Lachlan Brook? Lachlan Brook's first goal was fucking unreal. Like, actually, like, freakish. Like, freakish. Like, unreal goal. He scored what, a brace? Hat-trick? Brace. He scored a brace, 5-0 in the first half. That was an unreal performance from Western Sydney. Western United looked like a completely different team to what they were last week. Like, last week they were good. Last week they were pretty good, and this week they were just not good. So, okay, that's great analysis from me. Obviously, Wellington 1-2-1 against Perth. Zavada and Crave. So, yeah, they're two marquee signings. Doing the goods for them, which you like to see. A bit of a dodgy penalty, which was saved by their relatively young keeper, is it not? Yeah, Alex Paulson, who's only 21. He's only played 10 A League games in his career. So full credit to him, because he pretty good penalty stop. Against Adam Taggart. Taggart, was it he missed the penalty? Yeah, it would have been Taggart. Yeah. So there you go. Other than that, Friday night, pretty good win by Brisbane, 3-0. Henry Hall with 2, Sydney in the mud, and City in the mud. How good is football? But yes, that is all for today's episode. I think I'm pretty sure we're going to wrap this up now. We're going to wrap this up. So before we do, preview of the week, preview of the coming weeks. Obviously, there's AFL Cup. The Matildas play Chinese Taipei, so they're going to win that like 12-0, I'll say. Kerr with 7. Yeah, City versus Sydney on Friday night, which will be a good game. And then Victory versus Adelaide on Saturday night, which will be an even better game, I think. Yeah, the Prem ticking along nicely. Chelsea play Tottenham next Tuesday, so I guess we'll speak about that game next week. But yes, thank you all very much for watching another episode of the Two Foot Tackle Podcast. I do appreciate you all sticking around. If you have, make sure you like, subscribe, notification bell, do other good stuff. All the socials, Two Foot Tackle Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. Link in the bios of both Twitter and Instagram for all your Two Foot Tackle podcasting needs. All the audio platforms, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Anchor, and Spotify. Yes, thank you very much. Speak to you guys soon. Stay well, stay safe, and goodbye.